It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello there and welcome to the What Culture Game podcast. I'm Ben Roy and it's Wednesday, so that means Scott's eating a KFC somewhere. I'm joined today by Ewan and Josh. How are you doing?
The Colonel has him in his vice-like grip, I'm telling you.
He's returned. Like, the Colonel's back, so why not?
We've all been brainwashed and we're just like getting the Colonel up, like in the Colonel's like new foot.
Crawling back, Josh Brown. I've literally lost. I've insulted about, I imagine, a third of our viewership who live where the Colonel's from, somewhere in the deep south.
I mean, lucky for those viewers that their KFC's never closed. I'm going to paint a picture for you quickly. Walking to my local shop the other day, it was a Sunday, and like in the cartoons, I caught a whiff of a sign. I was like, what's that? And started floating towards the KFC. Like, I actually floated as an
like
army
Peter Porker.
Yeah, as an army of food delivery drivers were there just waiting. There we go. And this is why Scott's not here today, because he's getting his KFC.
You practically did a Witcher side mission there. You had to turn your Witcher senses. You're following the scent straight into KFC's doors.
5 years on, I'm finally
getting into it. Batman detective mode. Alfred, I can filter the computer to track particles of KFC's secret ingredient, and then just following it everywhere. Anyway.
As much as I would want this to be the KFC cast.
It's not the KFC cast. You've lied to me.
I got to bring you the chicken, and I just got to get in there, the bit of the taste. But
you're under false pretenses. I don't like it.
Yeah, but we all like video games, right?
And the channel is called What Culture Gaming.
We all kind of get upset when our games change and we don't like them. So I thought today, we've done this before. Like, we did, us three actually joined forces before to talk about video games that came back from the dead, a la Rainbow Six.
And
Colonel Sanders, he's returned as well. Mm-hmm. And I thought we would now join together and go into games that keep getting updated, but go too far, like add too much or change the meta so much that it doesn't really resemble what that first product that you loved when it first hit the shelves or hit your digital storefront or anything like that. So I just wanted to pick both your brains today about, like, is there a game, or do you feel this happens too much with games where developers are just always adding stuff to always get in the headlines or keep getting that user interaction or bring new people in, that it just kind of muddies the water?
Yeah, I was going to bring up potentially two games. I won't say Rainbow Six Siege, because I did get back into it the other month and had a good time until you get to the upper ranks of that game on console, where you just come across all the saddest, most miserable people ever who have found a way to get like a mouse and keyboard set up going on their console, and it just makes the like playing on the platinum ranks is just impossible now. Yeah. You'll have fun getting to platinum, and you'll get to platinum and you'll just encounter so much BS that it's not worth your effort. And that's not really a fault of the meta or updates. That's more of an issue on Sony and Microsoft's side in respect to the Xbox One and PlayStation. So, but if I was going to talk about a game that I feel as though got too many updates and lost me, I'm going to say Overwatch. Now, I know that IGN have done their thing now where they re-review everything, and they've just re-reviewed Overwatch and given it a big old 10. Big old
okay.
10.
Masterpiece.
And I absolutely love Overwatch. It's like one of my favorite games of the last console generation. I actually got back into it round about when the Moira update dropped, and I really like Moira. I thought she was a great character. But that game, to me, typifies these current multiplayer titles that feel so beholden to change the meta, and they're constantly responding to consumer feedback. Oh, this character's underpowered. This character's overpowered. We've got to change the meta because everyone's relying on this like this team build or whatever. And Overwatch now, to me, I feel as though I could never get comfortable playing that game because every time I come back, the character that I was familiar with, that I enjoyed playing, was like now played completely differently. And the example I'd probably use here is D.Va. Now, apparently when D.Va was first in the game, she was completely useless. I didn't think so. I thought she was a great character, had really fun playing her. And then they felt the need to make her really, really good. And then she became too good. And I'm like, balancing games is so tricky unless your name's Bungie and you can do Halo perfectly. But Overwatch, to me, I feel as though that game in its earlier stages was fine as it was. And I understand that with every character and map you add, things are going to have to change. But I felt as though it got to a point where they were changing the meta just for the sake of changing the meta. And that might be a very ignorant thing for me to say because I've not played the game in like 2 years now because of the meta changes, and it might be amazing and stuff. But I genuinely thought that at the time it had gone through too many changes. And at that point, I was just like, you know what? I'm going to cut my losses here. I had a good time with Overwatch, but I can't keep up with everything that's going on.
It's funny you should mention that, Ewan, because I did more or less the same thing with Overwatch. It wasn't to the point where I was that frustrated with it, but I felt like it had updated so much in the time since I was away that I felt very similar in that I didn't want to jump back in to have to learn everything again. And that's not necessarily just a fault of Overwatch or Blizzard or whatever. I think that's just a common theme among a lot of these games. Like, some titles I could be really into. It's happened to Rainbow Six Siege now. I've had such an extended break from that game that I'm worried about getting back into it, because I wonder whether it's just kind of grown beyond me, if that makes sense. And I do think, you know, that's obviously very much a me problem as well by not constantly keeping up with it. But I do think there's something quite intimidating about going back to a game that has changed so much or rebalanced so much that it kind of doesn't represent what you loved originally about it. And that might, again, it's not necessarily, it's more an optics problem. It's more optics of like being a fan of having an idea of what a game is. In any small change might throw that completely out of whack and make you not want to return to it. It's a very strange relationship that I think is quite unique to modern games, as we see a lot of these games as service releases come out, as we see, you know, games occupy a role as a platform rather than an individual experience. And sometimes that, you know, pays off. If you're in those communities, if you've been in Rainbow Six from the start, you probably love the way it's changed and continue to modify and continue to keep you interested. But yeah, I do agree that, like you said, with Overwatch, sometimes there are moments where it just loses you. It feels like it's making updates for the sake of making updates. And to a lot of people, that might be awesome, but I do think it loses a lot of players in the process.
I kind of think that some games tend to listen to their fans too much, if that makes sense, because I've never stepped into Overwatch, so I can't really speak to that. But I'm going to go to Rainbow Six as an example here. I used to love playing as Ash. Like, I thought, like, I would nickname her.
No, I'm not having this.
Guess what? I nicknamed her Bay because Ash was amazing. Ash was my main. When I wasn't playing as good old Margaret, you know, Thatcher, I would then choose Ash and go in there for the kill. But then they did a horrible thing. They took away Ash's ACOG scope.
Good. It was a good thing. She was broken. She's still broken, Benroy.
How about it's Victoria? How about people that play as Ash are just pretty victorious and like to win a lot? I don't know. Winner, winner, Rainbow Six dinner. But they took away my ACOG scope. And it's never been the same. That character has never really got back into the groove with Ash. So I've had to go. I mean, it's drawn me to some of the newer people. But for me there, that kind of like you, if your Moira character situation, that kind of ruined, like, not ruined in the drastic way that my life is destroyed, but it kind of like made it less fun to play as that person.
Well, the thing is that I think we touched on an interesting kind of how the double-edged sword of like the changing of the meta and updates and stuff, because you're right, when these changes came into effect, I used to play on Overwatch, for instance, I used to play as Mercy all the time, and they changed it so that her ultimate was then an ability. And I kind of thought that messed with the satisfaction of where your team would have died and you would have timed a resurrection perfectly. And obviously there was the idea of momentum resurrecting, where you keep more of your posse alive basically for a longer period of time, or you come in and get on the point and revive everyone and basically win the game. And with that, they changed it, and it was a case of like, well, okay, that pushes me to go and consider different characters, but is it necessarily working for the long run. The thing with Rainbow Six and the Ash stuff is that I feel as though sometimes developers, they make easy changes to try and address a more fundamental issue. So with that character, the main issue has always been, I thought, was the fire rate of their weapons, their speed, and how tiny their hitbox was. And obviously the ACOG helped it a lot, but it didn't address the fundamental issue of why that character was broken. At least to me. And yeah. Again, I assume when you stopped playing Ash, you went to a character that was kind of similar or had like a similar kind of fraggy sensibility where they'd go in for kills all the time, like a Zephyr or something like that. I don't know.
It's funny, if I want to play as Ash, I'm feeling very aggressive, but then sometimes, like say on a defender side, I'll just like to pick someone with a shotgun, like for example, like I know it's different, the defender, but Frost. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I just like to sit back and just wait for someone around to come around the corner and murder them. I used to love playing as Castle as well, but I kind of fell off that character as well. So I don't know, I'm kind of like here and there.
You're the man who keeps castling me on the objective, you are. You absolutely are. I'm trying to get out, just go and put the castle up.
I tell you what, though, when we are so far ahead, I will burst out the Tatanka or burst out Montaigne and just have a laugh.
I love that about Rainbow Six, because when I first started playing it, I must have put tens and tens of hours into a single character, and of course it was Ash, because Ash was the best and I was very good at playing Ash, and I could make all my friends jealous.
What kind of company do I keep? What is this? I thought I raised you both better. You're just here going like, ah, yes, I love playing as Ash because I like kill. What about the team?
You never play with my friends. They're complete liabilities, man. They're already written off. I need to do whatever I can to turn the tide. But what I will say is, as that game progressed, I did find myself branching out. Usually, at least when I play multiplayer games, I branch out at the start before I get into a groove, you know what I mean? I branch out, try all the weapons in Call of Duty, get a loadout that I like, get the perks that I like, and more or less just stick to it. In Rainbow Six, it was more or less the exact opposite. I found, you know, a couple attackers, a couple defenders that I really liked, but now, at least when I used to jump back into it, I would mix it up. I'd be encouraged to players, you know, different attackers, different defenders, depending on who my friends had chosen, depending on who I was fancying in the moment, depending on which skins I'd unlock for certain characters and stuff like that. So I think Rainbow Six is quite a good example, at least to me, of encouraging you to work as, or at least experiment with different player styles, experiment with different operators. But again, sometimes, like we've been saying, there is a sweet spot. Sometimes you might get out of that by tweaking things too much. And then when you're finally getting to grips with one character, it changes and then you're kind of back to square one. That's kind of frustrating for me as a player, because I feel like time is so precious and I've invested a lot of time into these games. And if you make a major change like that, that puts me back at the beginning, it's kind of like, well, maybe I'm done. Because for me, I don't play games forever. I always have a point where I move on to something else. And oftentimes that comes when a sweeping change like that is made. And I do feel like I've gone back to square one and I have a nice end point to jump onto another title.
I will just say, Ewan, so characters I moved on to, Nomad has a pretty good light scope. So basically replaced Ash for me. And Maverick, I don't know if either of you played much in the Maverick era.
Yeah.
Just like burning a little hole in there and just getting someone with that. But I just wanted to... Yeah, changes that I really didn't like in the game, and kind of a reason that spurred this on, was PUBG. So PUBG's been around, like, people hail it as like the birth of the battle royale genre, but then we've got H1Z1, we've got all these other little people around the corners. But I'm going to talk about PUBG now, and a game I've put over 1,000 hours into. I have, across 3 platforms, have multiple dinners. I'm not like, oh, I've done this. I've lost thousands of times as well. But they've been rampantly changing that game to the point where they've been looking at Fortnite and going, we need to be, quote, fun, and we can't be the hide in the bushes game we once were, which I kind of really dug and enjoyed. It harkened back to like the original Ghost Recon games on the PC, where you would spend half an hour crawling through 4 bushes and picking people's heads off. But with this, they've now gone and they've added bots into this new season. And at first, it was really weird the way they rolled it out, because it wasn't made so clear. And playing the game, it feels empty, strange, and weird all at once, because we're pretty sure, there might be someone on YouTube who's done a massive investigation to this, but we're pretty sure that if you're in a spot and you look away, they just spawn a bot behind you. because no word of a lie, there was one part on the original map, Erengirl, where my team was ambushed by, I think, one real person. I ended up having 7 bots spawning behind my back every time when it was impossible for them to be. And it's just almost taken the game and ripped out its heart and soul from you're going on an island with 100 different people on it. You know these are real people and you've got to use your wits, or you've got to be sneaky, or you've got to utilize something, or just drive around a car and be a troll and honk that horn to get through and win. But here it just feels like, this is like, I'm going to use, I say baby mode because it's just like, it feels like they're trying to make it so it's a wider appeal, and they've realized, I know baby's life is like a reductive thing, I'm just trying to think of something better to say, but yeah. It's a way to try and bring more people in and try and be like, look, we can be like the Fortnite too.
Please, that's what I was going to say. It sounds like that's a really interesting point you've raised there, is the idea that a game can continue and persist for so long that when it gets challenges to the thing that it does so well, does it, you know, stay the course, or does it shimmy around and try to meet the challenge by mimicking them in a way, I guess? And, you know, Siege to me maybe is a little bit as taking a look at Overwatch and trying to mimic that with the more outlandish operators that it has at its disposal as well, I would say. And the PUBG thing, I called it PUBG in a video the other week and people got very angry. PUBG, that's a shame because, yeah, I've not played much of that at all, but clearly its franchise identity was very much this is billed as the serious battle royale game, whereas Fortnite was very much on a capital. It's weird how that battle royale circle has come complete almost.
You've had an issue.
Yeah, you've got like the Fortnite copying PUBG, and now PUBG is copying Fortnite, and it's weird how it's sort of like, I'm not going to say a symbiotic relationship, but it's like they're constantly feeding off each other. And the little nuances are what make those games. So when they get further and further ahead, and the temptation to shed their franchise identity to actually catch up with something else, that's a big peril of this new kind of era of gaming we're in, which I guess no one's really had much of a conversation about.
Yeah, and it's kind of like, I don't even remember, back like 2 years ago, I was upset when they took the ability to put 8x scope on an AK. It's like, that was my jam, man, the 8x scope on with a suppress on the AK. But now it's just... now it's a game full of bots, or it's a ranked game, as they're calling it, with only 64 players. So those maps, I don't know, already on the normal mode, it feels empty. And on a ranked mode, on some of those maps, like Miramar, which is massive, it's sure, it's going to be nice and it's going to be slow paced and things like that. And they're increasing the weapon drops. And it just feels like they're trying to please everyone. But like, look, there's more weapons. You're going to get nice weapons. Please come back, please. It won't be just arduous and painful. Like, I mean, yes, it's bad when you have 20 minutes and die and only have a pistol to your name, but I think that kind of was the part and heart of PUBG, and I think players didn't want that, had already moved over to things like Fortnite, Apex and Warzone.
I think that's a fascinating case study because it kind of makes you question where the peak of that game was, you know what I mean? And if these games have a kind of finite life, it sounds like by implementing bots and stuff, they're trying to extend, perhaps artificially, the lifespan of PUBG, you know what I mean? Because of perhaps a dwindling player base. If they can't fill the servers, they're putting bots in there just to try to hold on to that experience that was there at launch. And I think when we talk about a lot of these games as service games, not just multiplayer games, like there always feels like there's a sweet spot to play them. For GTA 5 Online, for instance, I feel like just after heist launch, that was the sweet spot for that, in my opinion. Obviously, it's still going now and making a lot of money, but you can see kind of the life cycle of these titles kind of peak and then fall dramatically to the ground, depending on updates, depending on who's playing them, depending on the player base, depending on the community and stuff like that. So for me, as a very anxious person, that's always something I think about when I'm buying into these games after the fact or at launch. When am I going to get the best version of this title? And I think it's a question that stops me going back to probably great games like Rainbow Six Siege and Overwatch and stuff, and kind of a bit wary about buying into new franchises. Like, for instance, I know that if I buy a Call of Duty after launch weekend, I did this with Infinite Warfare. I bought that when it was in the sale because I didn't agree with them holding Modern Warfare to ransom. But then I just never really touched the multiplayer. It just wasn't for me because the time had passed. I felt like I couldn't get into that ecosystem. And at that time, you know, it was like January, February. There was going to be another Call of Duty in less than a year. So there was no reason or no need for me to jump into that ecosystem.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
The anxiety there as well is such a good point, because you don't know when the support will actually end as well. They kind of rise and flow and they ebb and whatever. And it's even more precarious if you're, you know, with EA. We've looked at what Battlefront 2 and Battlefield 5 over the last, you know, couple of weeks have just basically had their updates. You know, Battlefront 2 has had that. By all accounts, seems as though EA have cut that game off prematurely, and DICE had loads more content planned. And that's a shame as well. You know, when you're investing this time and energy in this game, then it kind of comes to a point where the vision isn't complete, and that's something to factor in as well. And, you know, obviously the topic is very much about games that updated so much that you kind of lost their way or whatever. But it's also interesting to note that when a game is a game as a service, when is the project ever truly finished? And when do developers recognize that kind of that end goal? Are the goalposts constantly shifting? What happens when they get to the bit where they're like, okay, our vision has been complete now? Do they then go, let's move on to our next project? Or in their head are they thinking, well, we need to artificially extend the life of this game, like you mentioned with potentially with PUBG?
Yeah. Another minor one I've just thought of is I've been going back into Gears 5 a lot recently, and they made a few changes here and there. Like, say, there's a character called JD who would have this gun called the Lancer with a grenade launcher in the bottom. You would start that in Horde. Now, they're very on top of getting rid of X points in that game, where you would get your Lancer, you'd put on a weapons locker, so you wouldn't have to buy one, commit suicide, respawn with a new one for free. And they've taken that out now by just giving him what they call a boom shot instead, and it kind of like doesn't fit because that character wouldn't come into battle with that straight away, and it doesn't feel right that he's the only one now being segregated not to have that gun. And other things like in they had this mode called Escape, where there was one map where you could, if you I got it right as well, you would run through and you would just do it to check off some of the timers so you could get your points through to upgrade through their version of the battle pass. And they ripped up that map, changed it, and have made it pretty much impossible to ever do that run again now. And I don't know whether it's right. It's not, the question is right, but is that too far as well? Like fixing exploits, which aren't exploits, because none of those exploits are hurting people, because none of them are competitive modes. They're all co-op modes with other players against AI.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess the thing there is you'd have to bear in mind the developer's vision in a case of like, well, did we intend for people to capitalize on this and then go forward with it? The one thing that I was going to ask both of you as well is the role of esports in the way these games are actually evolving, because certainly in the case of Rainbow Six, we know that they, with the Pro League, Ubisoft are constantly changing the meta and the maps themselves based on feedback from pro players, which is a really interesting thing to be a part of. But if you're not a pro player and you don't go for those pro strats or the things that they do in those games, it can have a really weird effect on the actual game itself. And Ubisoft have loads of data that they use to basically go in and make these changes into effect. You know, they have like there was a really good graph. I think it was Get Flanked, the YouTube channel. They had a really good graph on that Ubisoft put out where it was like the pick rate of an operator and the round win rate, and calculating that basically Jaeger and Ashe were like way too high on those and therefore needed to be looked at to be changed or whatever. But the thing that really fascinates me about this is, you know, with Overwatch and Rainbow Six certainly, is the idea of pro players basically negotiating the meta and the way that game transforms over time. And it's interesting to me. I feel as though I can't think of another example where esports have had such a drastic influence on the way a game is developed over time, particularly with Siege and with Overwatch, because everything is constantly changing and evolving based on their feedback. And again, thing you have to point out there is that even though both of these games have very, you know, highly populated pools on ranked game modes and stuff where people are very much into the competitive side of things, if you're not keeping up with the esports, how does that, are you segregating your player base that way? It's one of those things that I find really fascinating, because on one hand, on paper, I think if you're listening to your most dedicated players to get the feedback you need and to get the most, you know, kind of compelling experience possible, that makes sense. But at the same time, is it a case of one size fitting all, or is it something else entirely?
It's a fascinating thing, because like you said, yeah, like what it's always a balance, isn't it? It's who do you want to look at? Do you want to look at and get feedback from this high level dedicated audience? Or do you want to kind of branch out and encourage new players to join? You don't want to, like you said, segregate that experience from people who might not have been able to buy it straight away or are only just getting around to it. You know, you look at, again, I'm going to go back to Grand Theft Auto 5 Online. Like, that game continues to succeed because people keep buying Grand Theft Auto 5, you know what I mean? That game is so old now that there would be people just picking it up who wouldn't have even been able to legally buy it, you know what I mean, when it came out. That game is constantly getting populated by new players in a way that informs the meta and informs the updates and informs how it works. So for me, it's always interesting to see, like I said, especially as we go into this new age of video games that are supposed to live forever, how do they get to the point where the games can live forever? Is it by catering to this incredibly dedicated fan base that will continue to give you feedback, continue to pay for things? Or is it by trying to court new fans as well? Or is it, I assume, somewhere in the middle? Because like Battlefront 2, for instance, yeah, like there is that feeling that the content has been cut short, and that is very much EA kind of sacrificing the dedicated built-in audience to move on to something else, to move on to Battlefield 5 or a new Battlefront further on down the line. It's I don't know. I don't envy being in a developer's position, because they have to analyze so much data. I think Mark Brown of Game Maker's Toolkit did a really good video on how developers actually take feedback from fans and how they, you know, shouldn't necessarily listen to the solutions they have, but use that to inform questions about their own game and interrogate it like that and move it around. But yeah, the amount of data that they've collated on these multiplayer shooters is ridiculous. And obviously, you know, that data needs to be informed by actual lived experience and stuff. But like, again, I don't envy it, though I do want to kind of mention one thing that we haven't touched on, and that's updating a game after the fact with kind of business practices only in mind. I'm thinking very much of Activision games when it comes to this. Yeah. Black Ops, that is a series that is terrible for just ruining the experience after launch, you know what I mean, by Activision implementing loot boxes and microtransactions or pay-to-win weapons and stuff like that, and kind of completely souring the positivity that they might have gained from the community. And that idea of shipping you a game at launch that is perhaps better than what you get further on down the line is just, it's kind of, it's worrying, it's a bit insulting, and we've talked about it loads in news about the language they use. You know, developers for Activision games often come out, me and Scott did a news on this yesterday actually, they come out and say there won't be any microtransactions at launch, but then that gives them so much leeway to change it after the fact. And again, just referencing someone else's video who talked about this smarter than me, but I think Jim Sterling did a really good video on how that kind of gets people to buy into these multiplayer experiences, gets them invested. You know, I might be level 50 in Call of Duty, I might have all these weapons. And then when they release these updates, it kind of, you know, encourages you to say, well, I've invested X amount of hours, so I might as well buy this battle pass. I might as well buy this loot box. I might as well spend £2.50 for a weapon skin or something like that. And it's quite insidious the way they get you in with a experience that is complete or free or whatever, and then add all this stuff on the top. So the investment is already there, so you feel like you need to do it. That is something that I don't want to see publishers kind of get carried away with.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only thing there is that I'm kind of grateful for the fact that we do have, so, I guess grateful isn't the right word. I'm very happy now that we've moved away from the era of season passes where you'd segregate your player base with more and more content coming out. So like, say, the Battlefront 1 season pass was quite notorious for that. You know, it was like, what, 30, 40 quid after the game came out? Madness. And you had that situation where you were effectively segregating the game's player base. And the further a game goes on, the more segregated that player base becomes. And the more difficult it is to maintain a community. And I guess the way you maintain that is to monetize different aspects of the game. But yeah, certainly Call of Duty is the worst offender there. I remember being very upset when I got Modern Warfare Remastered. I think it was a free game for PlayStation 1 month. I can't remember.
Yeah.
And I ended up picking it up and I was like, eh? What's all this? What's all this bollocks they've put? What? Ridiculous. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Like, Modern Warfare Remastered, I remember that caused such a stink because they added in all of this extra stuff that wasn't there originally and made you kind of grind it out and pay for it whilst also selling the DLC that was originally released
separately, at
an additional price. So you didn't even get that, but you had all of this stuff that you didn't want. And yeah, for me, Activision are by far the worst for it, you know what I mean? They've done some good things. I will stand by the fact that Call of Duty Modern Warfare, the reboot is the word I'm looking for, has handled its post-release content very well and sort of tapped into what you said there, Ewan.
Except for the updates. I can't play it.
Except
the file size is too big.
Yeah, unless you have a massive hard drive, you can't play it. And I couldn't download Mafia 2 last night because Call of Duty is 200 gigabytes. But the way it's not segregated its community, like you said, is a step in the right direction, though we will see what happens with this year's Call of Duty.
Yeah, and they don't forget Crash Team Racing. They put they put all that guff in it, enough so they can not put it on the box. Like, I remember another smart man, Sir Jim Sterling, would show the box, said no microtransactions, and then they're all in there because stuck them all in there after launch.
It's like they get the developers to come out and like sort of say like, we're not planning it, it's not going to happen, and then it happens anyway. And I feel like I said in that news video, I feel sorry for those people because obviously that's not their decision. They don't necessarily want to make a game like that. I've been writing about Dead Space 3, which obviously isn't a multiplayer game, but how, you know, the decision to include microtransactions in that game came very late in development and completely messed up a system they already had in place. And I wonder whether that's the case for these Activision games and Battlefront 2 at launch and, examples like that.
I have a worrying question that I'm going to posit here right now, and it kind of goes into the digital media age and stuff and the idea of ownership over your own media and stuff. And the thing that I'm going to ask you both now is that with games as a service, do you ever truly have ownership over this product? As you say, you know, the goalposts are constantly shifting, the games are constantly evolving over the course of launch or whatever. It's almost like you're buying a ticket to play new content that comes out over and over time. Of course, you know, when you buy a whatever a game before that, it's the case of, like, you own the game, you can play the multiplayer, whatever. I'm not disputing that fact, but at the same time, there's now gaming in 2020. If you buy a game and it's a games as a service title, or it's going to be constantly updated post-launch, you are putting your faith in the developers that you're still going to be invested in this game, that this game that you have gotten is going to be the same thing a few years from now. And I find that very interesting, you know. And the idea is, as well, it's like, obviously you pay it, you own it, you can play it for however long you want, but is it ever that idea? I don't know if I'm articulating this point well enough, I'm getting across my thoughts, the idea of actually, like, having a games as a service title and it constantly evolving to the point where it's not something you're interested in playing anymore. Is that at odds with the idea of, like, you've been sold on a vision and now the vision doesn't match up with what you wanted? I think it's an interesting, murky ethical area potentially.
No, I know exactly what you mean. I think it's like, it probably deserves its own bloody podcast at this point, but I think that's becoming even more compounded by the fact that we have so many subscription services now. Like, if you download a game off PlayStation Plus, like Modern Warfare, once you stop paying for PlayStation Plus, it's not technically yours. Those free games are only free because they're being loaned to you while you pay for another service. And I think it's the same on Games Pass, where if you download a game off that system service, once you stop paying for it, that you don't have access to it anymore. So it's almost like kind of what Microsoft were trying to do in 2013, but they went about it in the worst way possible, got a bunch of backlash by saying that, you know, essentially you don't own these games, you just license them out, you pay to participate in a platform, and you don't necessarily own a complete thing because games aren't necessarily made to be complete anymore.
That's a video for you, Josh, that you can do. How Microsoft secretly won the console argument or something like that.
You know what? I don't think you're entirely wrong there. I think there is something in that, because pretty much everything they wanted to do has happened. They've just made the messaging much more consumer-friendly, I think.
Look, Don Matrick is still somewhere. He's on some pipes, and he's just waiting for that innocent player to come so he can absorb them and then be brand new again and alive.
And you said he's Palpatine.
And Phil Spencer might just be some sort of shadowy figure in the way at the moment. Yes, maybe. But I'm just going to posit this. PUBG and Resident Evil 7. PUBG got its proper release in the same year as Resident Evil 7 came out. Resident Evil 7 is still the same game. You can buy some things in there to make it, but we won't go into that. But the thing is, PUBG is so different now, and they're just bots and 64 players. So that's how I'm going to end this, by going, I can look at those two games and how much they've changed, and you can look at all the other ones, and she's like, I don't think we do own any games, as you were saying, and I am now losing ownership or the sense to want to play this game as it has gone on. But I just want to know what everyone else who's been watching this and listening feels. Do you think that developers are putting too much into their games? Are they editing? Are they adding too much? Can't they just let them sit? Let us know down in the comments below, or tweet us at WCGP. We will do question podcasts every now and then when we get a nice little bucket full. So if you just tweet us with WCGP, add to the bucket. We'll get Scott to sift through that once he's done with his KFC bucket, and we'll have another question podcast for you very soon. But just remember, until next time, Don Matrick's probably always out there.
What a threat. What a threat, Bedroy. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
That's the end. Bye. That's the deadpan end.
Oh,
bye.
My God.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.